Before we continue, one of the ways we keep all of our content for you, the listener, free of charge is our amazing sponsors, and today, Anchor is one of those sponsors. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts right from your phone or computer. Anchor is going to distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere podcasts are listened to, and you can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor. FM to get started.
Hello, clients, and thank you for joining us here for the Better Call Saul After Show, Season 3, Episode 9, Fall. You better call us.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
It's nice and chill here. 10 p.m. at AfterBuzz TV, and we're here to talk about Better Call Saul.
It's the time.
I'm your host, Steve Kaufman. You can find me on Twitter, at Steve Kaufman. That is K-A-U-F-M-A-N-M. We are not at full strength tonight.
We're not.
I have not gotten explanations from our co-hosts, but I feel like both of them are E3-related.
E3-related.
They're E3-related. I think
I don't want to speculate, but
That feels likely for both Rich and Lucretia, who are not with us. They will be with us next week, or it's their loss, to be very honest.
They better be
season
with
finale
us.
Next week. But Nate is here.
That's right. What's going on, guys? Nate Miller. You can find me on social media at DogLikeNate. And yeah, Steve and I are here to break down this episode.
We're breaking this down. We're bringing the energy, the attitude.
That's right.
All the things
necessary.
I like this episode. I
did too.
I like the way this show moves, and I've spoken about it before, that this show tends to kind of have the typical season arc in the middle of their seasons.
I've been thinking a lot about that, this, especially after watching this episode, because I watched the first season like weekly, and then the next two seasons I waited.
Yeah,
they're on Netflix, and I binge them.
Mm-hmm.
So going back again and watching it weekly, I definitely notice the kind of roller coaster effect throughout the season.
I would say if you really mapped out, we're on the 29th episode. If you really mapped out the 29 episodes, their whole seasons, as we would understand them traditionally in television, are episode 5 to episode 5.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But I guess that would mean that they had five. They spent five whole weeks kind of getting into this world, which someone let me know if I'm way off here. But like the pace of this show seems completely different from any other show, and I think there's something to be had about.
Well, it's just that it has the same upside that Breaking Bad had, in that, you know, it's a story and there's an end in mind, and they're working towards a goal, you know.
Very
that
much.
You know, it may not be 100% set in stone, but it's more or less decided. So having that capability lets you, once you have an end, it lets you go, then you can just continue to go back to the beginning and cross over and over again, and that's where you get all these layers. You don't get that with something when you're just trying to extend the life, because there's no end, so you never reach the end to go back and review, because you're constantly trying to create.
And while we're on the macro portion, I do really love that this show doesn't fall into the trap its premise could lead itself to. I call it the Wolverine paradox, which is a character lives and dies, and the A and the B that we actually follow them, it's the most interesting portion of their lives, is not live and die. We learned that with Wolverine in the three prequels to Wolverine, or two. Sorry, the two. Logan was great. That, like, I've learned that you don't always need to see every moment of a character's life, but they're not falling into that trope here. They're showing us specifically all the interesting things that happened to Saul and happened around Saul.
Yeah, I agree. I think you're getting just enough character exposition to kind of give the characters dimensions, but again, there's really no filler, and even what the episodes that kind of like feel like filler, more just so because they're kind of like lulls, they all serve a purpose, and especially when you go back and rewatch, there's a lot of lines and things to pick up on that it's kind of like, oh, if I was paying attention, I would have seen this coming.
And it also stands to reason that Jimmy's one character in a very big show at this point.
Yeah.
And I think that's really how they get away from the Wolverine paradox, is that they're moving slow in general, and then they're moving really slow with Jimmy to make him be Saul.
Mean, even starting off the top, just how, like, last episode of the week was called Slip, and then this one's called Fall, and just, like, again, the way they encapsulate kind of just the overall theme of the episode, and kind of how, like, even with each kind of, like, plot point that happened this episode, they all kind of fit into that, like, falling, you know, theme. Mm. It's really cool how they did that.
So, speaking of falling, Chuck has fallen from grace. At HHM.
Yeah, gracefully either.
He lost a lot of stock with Howard internally.
Oh, for sure.
But it's what the insurers that made him lose stock externally. And now Howard wants to force him out.
I think Howard has already been, like, struggling with trying to justify keeping him around and having him on and all that stuff. But especially after the outburst, I think he knew that he was going to react that way, and he wanted to give him the benefit of the doubt to see what would happen. But of course, after he had that reaction, he had to have the talk that I think he's been waiting to have, but he's been trying to, like, push it off.
He's been very well prepared for that talk. I think had the insurance thing not happened, he would have hopefully grown with Chuck, actually, because Chuck was getting better, has been getting a lot better. That I think it makes complete sense.
But I still think, like, the logic there is still, you know, there's still a certain amount of time that has already passed that can't be recouped, that he has not been there. So, like, I think Howard knows that he should have done this for a long time, but because he does respect Chuck so much, and, you know, how influential he was, he doesn't want to do this, but now he's, like, backed into a corner. And I think that really shows in the way he reacts. I loved Howard this episode. Like, it was so cool seeing, especially him and Chuck face off, because they're such strong personalities. But you can see, like, he's just had enough. He's like, look, I gave you so much rope, and you've hung yourself, and look, I did my best, and look, I'm not gonna, like, let all this stuff go down because you have this big ego thing. Like, they said double the insurance rate for the whole firm for everyone. That's crazy. We knew it was gonna be high, but that's crazy.
Truth be told, I feel like I missed it in the scene, or it might have been implied. That's double if Chuck stays on.
Right. That
if Chuck leaves, it'll still be more, because they still have to insure any case Chuck touched, but it wouldn't be double. That's what I've been saying, that I thought they would straight up just cut a deal with Howard and cut Chuck out, but that was also when I thought Chuck wasn't functioning. Because 2 weeks ago, Chuck was not functioning at all. Like, I think...
Yeah.
Everyone talked about how slow the show moves. Like, 2 weeks ago, Chuck was not functioning.
Yeah, he's definitely moved.
Had a space blanket in the middle of the street.
It was when Howard gets the letter, obviously, that he's decided he's going to sue them, which I can't wait to see.
Oh, yes.
But when he shows up at the door and comes in and he's like, you have the lights on? And I was waiting for when he left for Chuck to go, because, you know, and he did, like,
he's better, but he's not.
Yeah. He definitely was playing it up. Yeah. And I don't know. There's both sides. But I really liked Howard. It was really cool to see him, just kind of, like, he's so reserved all the time, and in this episode especially, you know, I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, but him and Jimmy too.
Oh, the him and Jimmy was great, and we'll get to that in a second. While we're lulling Raphael in the chat, quick shout out, thanks for joining us in the chat. You can join us in the chat live. We're live here at AfterBuzz TV.
Otherwise,
like, rate, subscribe, all the things. If you're
please
listening to my voice,
5 stars
helps us do all the things.
Smash the like button,
Or press it gently. I'm not going to tell you what to. I'm not going to tell you the force in which.
No gentle liking.
I'm not going to tell you the force in which you hit the like button. Tuco is here today. Tuco, Hector, Gus,
Nacho.
Yep. We had that. I was like, I'm not going to mess this up, and totally messed
it up. It's okay.
Nacho.
Yes. I was like, I don't know. I was surprised that, like, I was expecting us to just go straight to, like, him, to what's his name? Wow. Now you got me dropping names.
I'm bringing it.
The older Salamanca.
Hector?
Yes.
Yes, Hector.
I thought we were going to just go right into him, like, already being in the hospital or something.
Well,
and
I think that the plan should have been clear, but once again, the show moves a little fast. He pitched the plan 3 weeks ago, and we finally saw it come into fruition last week. he was replacing the pills with ibuprofen. So whatever he's
so taking, that was a practice.
No, whatever he didn't put poison in the pills. That was never the plan. The plan was to put ibuprofen in the pills. So instead of the effect of the pills actually helping him and saving his life,
he would just actually have a heart
slowly,
attack.
Yeah, he slowly okay. works towards having a heart
okay.
attack. The key is to swap them out. That we didn't quite get there. We didn't quite get there last week because it was a bit. Like, I noticed that when he mashed up ibuprofen, that the...
Yeah, I was thinking, like, how is that going to kill him? But that makes sense. Just trying to draw him out, because he usually goes for the medicine when he's already having a heart issue, which has a lot of heart issues. Yeah.
Instead of taking it as prescribed. That makes sense.
A great great little crime meeting scene with Hector and Gus and the phone, and that little smirk that he gave him, and then, like, it was just, like, barely there. And just the way he delivers those lines of, like, you know, no, this is not what I wanted, Don Hector, you know, and it's just so, like...
I actually believe him.
I don't.
I believe him in the sense of, I don't think he wants to work under a cartel at all.
No, there's
like,
no
I think
way.
I think he wants to run the drug game. Like, I think he straight up wants to run the drug game.
Well, I mean, I definitely think he has aspirations for more, but I think at this point... I don't think there's a way that he does what he does at all without the cartel. You can't without it's either one cartel or another. So I don't think it's the cartel it's just.
I think he wants to run his own cartel and not deal with the cartel. But I think he'd much rather, as we learn in Breaking Bad, he eventually takes down the cartel.
In regards to Hector, I think this is part of Gus's plan. I think he was. It 100% felt like a victory for him, and. Just seeing Hector blow up, of course, like we knew he would, like a child. I'm curious to see what's going to happen, because I'm sure that he's going to try to do something.
Well, both theories are still active right now of how Hector winds up in a wheelchair.
We'll have to see.
This could be by Gus's hand, or it could actually be the plan.
The thing with Nacho and his dad too, and what's going to happen when Hector comes to the shop? Obviously, Nacho's dad didn't take it very well.
Ooh, it could just be the dad.
Yeah,
that dad looks like a stand your ground kind of stand your ground at all costs kind of person.
It's happening. Like, a tussle goes wrong or something.
But a tussle goes wrong, he cracks his back on a machine or something.
Yeah,
I'm not going to border on predictions, but that seems likely. But I enjoy we didn't get much of them this week. There's not a whole lot to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, that scene with Nacho talking to his dad, I thought was really good. I imagine Nacho is a guy who knows that he's doing bad, but maybe feels it's necessary, or, like, you know, he's one of those bad guys that you kind of like. But it was a little bit heartbreaking to see him, like, coming to his dad and having to be honest with him. Not because he, you know, wanted to share with him what he was doing, but because out of safety, out of him not wanting his dad to be killed because of things that he's involved in. So I thought that was a little heartwarming to see him, you know, trying to open up and relate to his dad. Of course, it's sad that his dad wasn't, I don't think he's going to listen.
No. He's strikes
me as
Nacho's
in a tough spot.
Nacho's in a really tough spot, and I love that we know where all these characters wound up, but we're still fascinated and on the edge of our seats about next week.
It's like, you know, art imitates lives. It's people's lives. People have multiple lives within their lifetimes. You meet someone, you get to know them over the course of a couple of years, then one day they tell you about something, and it's like, wow, you had like a whole nother life, you know, before I even met you. And this is what we're seeing, is like this whole other life that Saul had as Jimmy before he even started doing any of this stuff that we see later in Breaking Bad. So
that happens a lot when I tell people I used to be a casino security guard. They'd make that face. They're like, wait, what?
I could see that.
You have a whole...
I could actually see that. It's not a surprise at all.
It's not the surprise. It's the...
But it's just...
That's a lot of stories.
It comes from left field.
A lot of stories I have not heard from you, Steve.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a gold mine there.
A little bit. We have a lot of possible Emmy voters who listen to this show. It's about that time of year. It's the four-year consideration season.
That's right.
A&E has something they want us to tell you about. It's called Born This Way. Last season on the Emmy-winning show Born This Way, seven young adults with Down syndrome blew critics away. The co-creator of Homeland, Alec Ganza, was inspired and said Born This Way got him thinking about responsibility in television and made him ask, what message should we be putting out into the world? This season, the cast continues to defy expectations and set new standards of the world of for the world of television. Born This Way, for your Emmy consideration, watch the new episodes Tuesdays at 10 on A&E.
I'll have to check that out.
I checked it out a little today. It's a good show.
It sounds really powerful.
Yes. I don't have a good transition from powerful.
I don't.
I should. Madrigal is powerful in the Breaking Bad world. That's the best I got.
Close.
It was close. It was real close, but we get this little piece with Madrigal Automotive.
Right.
Which seems like a bit of a smaller conglomerate now than it becomes when we meet them again in Breaking Bad.
I wonder.
But it stands to reason because Los Pollos Hermanos is already a franchised store in Better Call Saul, so it's probably already a subsidiary of Madrigal. Because Madrigal becomes just a giant thing that runs 14 freighters and has like 114,000 employees. But I do like this just old school mic of like, I understand what you think you're doing, Lydia. But what are you like?
Well, I think Mike is just, I mean, like you said, very old school. But Mike is also, I think Mike doesn't have like as firm of a grasp on the situation as he thinks he does. I think he thinks that Gus is more rooted into.
Well, because Gus is the atypical drug dealer. When you think of a drug dealer, you're thinking, when you think of drug dealer or the drug game, you're actually thinking of Hector.
Mm-hmm.
You're actually thinking of the Salamanca cartel.
But I think he's thinking that he's like this is what she does. Like this is a business that they just use to help legitimize money or whatever. Mm-hmm. And like this is a, you know, just like how he is like a cleaner. Like this is what they do. They clean up money or whatever. So he's not thinking of it as like, this is a newer partnership that Gus is just creating, and Gus is still building his empire of networks of people to deal with and stuff, and this is the first time that this has happened. Like, that's all... That's, like, the last thing that I think he would think of. So he's trying to figure out what's the catch, what's the angle. He's trying to figure out where the game is, because usually when you have some type of operation like that running over a certain amount of time, you know, the longer it runs, the more likely you're to get caught. So that's why he's like, well, don't put my name on the books, you know, when A, B, and C of all these people have come through here to clean up their money. Then someone comes to look, catches those people, catches me too, whatever.
I also think he doesn't quite understand. And we learn at the very end where Lydia tells him, like, if all you think Gustavo Fring is a drug dealer.
And, I mean,
she says it in a way and with a look that it's like, I think there's a certain level of Gustavo Fring that's always been unspoken, that he's not just a shrewd businessman and a guy who deals drugs. I think he's, to a certain extent, someone who assumes there's a line, and once you cross it, you're subhuman. And he's doing something to just try to wipe out all the subhumans.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely
That's
sense
very
some
crudely said, but you know, like,
yeah, no, I know. In his own way, he's doing good. He thinks
he's doing good. By letting bad people, by profiting off of bad people doing what bad people will do anyway.
In his own mind,
making less bad things happen.
I'm curious if we get some type of explanation from her of what she thinks he is, because I read it as her having some type of personal connection or something with him, and, you know, him as a man being more than just a drug dealer, because in terms of business, I'm pretty sure, you know, essentially he's a drug dealer. He's a crime lord.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I think she sees him as more than just a businessman or a drug dealer, in the sense that she sees him as a community leader.
Right. I get that.
As a community leader, as someone who's literally making everything better.
I want to hear her argument.
I would love to hear her
argument.
Because
I definitely got that kind of a sense. I just think that argument is a little bit weak. I think that's a little bit of a stretch. So to me, that reads as something of like she has some type of personal connection with him. He helped her out, or a family, or a kid, or something like that.
I could see
it. So that's why
too.
She's like, oh, he's more than that. He's, you know, as a person or whatever. Because from a pragmatic standpoint, I think a drug dealer is a pretty good title, unless. The other angle is it's not an emotional thing, it's like a actual, like, real thing. He is doing involved in a lot more than just drug dealing, like, you know, illegal imports or, you know,
mm-hmm.
getting things across the border or things of that nature, some other illegal business. Maybe that's what she's talking about. Like, it's a bigger empire than that.
I think it's all the things we said. I mean, it's probably all the things
we've
said.
Some combination.
Because I think the fact that I wouldn't be shocked if she was low ranking at Madrigal and he came in with his logistics and shot her to the moon, and she has that connection with him, but also sees a level of complete genius in him. And maybe I'm grasping at straws with the sociological part, but maybe
hopefully
I'm not.
We'll find out.
Hopefully we'll find out. I would not be shocked if the character of Gustavo Fring was like this weird classist.
But it was cool. It was good to see some Mike, you know, as always. We got a nice, really nice shot there where he's reading the contract, and then you get like it's like an upward shot of his face through the glass mm-hmm. of the desk. It was really nice. And I'm really hoping that this is going to be leading into setup for the finale of him doing some badass shit for Gus, because we still don't know what his side of the deal is.
Yeah, it's got to be...
He's going to be doing something.
It's got to be worth, like, $30,000.
Yeah, a considerable amount.
It's like $30,000 worth of work, because that's what Gus put up.
So we'll see. And I'm assuming it has something to do with the whole Hector blowing up, because Gus had to know that that was coming and had to know that Hector would respond that way, because it's Gus, so.
Yeah, I'm sure. And I think, actually, to bring it back to Hector, I think Gus needs to play the role of, I had no idea this was going to happen. I was serving at the Great Bolsa and the cartel. He has made this choice, not myself. So to keep playing that, if he needs stuff to get messed up even more,
mm-hmm.
he needs Mike to do it.
Yeah, he needs a third party.
Yeah, he needs Mike to do it, and he needs Mike to do it in a way where it's just like these things happen. Like anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So let's head on back to HHM, where our boy Jimmy McGill needs some money.
Well, I mean, we got to go to the start with that first, because
he went to Sandpiper Crossing.
Yeah, which is what we see first, which I had, to be completely honest, forgot about completely.
I had forgotten he had a chunk of that settlement.
Yeah.
And I think my brain specifically, the show did a good job of explaining how long class actions take. Mm-hmm. That I kind of pushed it out of my brain, even with like the financial, even with Jimmy's financial troubles in the past weeks, where it's like,
yeah, well, he's probably... And I think that was intentional, because you know, if you know anything about class actions, you know they take a while, forever, anyways, like in reality.
Mm-hmm.
But they did a good job of explaining it to make it like they didn't leave a lot of clues for it to be like, well, this is still on the table, you know, because when we're reaching that point a few weeks ago where Jimmy's at rock bottom,
yeah.
I was not even thinking about this being an option. So it was really nice to see them come back here and go, oh, I forgot about that. Oh, he has a nice chunk of that. And so when he's going through the letter, he sees the settlement. And this is why, you know, this is the fall, you know, of the plot line is, you know, he games this lady. He plays her. Like, it's bad. Like, this is an old lady. This is not like some douchebag at the bar who's like being super rude to the raider. This is a really nice, sweet old lady.
Aaron.
Yeah, and he is...
Or sorry, no. Aaron was the lawyer.
Elaine was her name? It was Liliana?
Landry.
Irene Landry, that's what it was. Poor Irene. Tore her friendship apart. Made her cry, and a nice old lady.
Do we think the Howard scene was the catharsis for this?
I mean,
that he kind of they owned that. That's who he is. Although that Howard scene was amazing, like that Howard scene in general was amazing.
I think this is more a product of him. But what we saw last week with him, you know, the money in the end after he talked to the community service guy. Mm-hmm. I think this is him more. Of him kind of accepting slipping Jimmy's song of him, whatever, as mm-hmm. like, you know what, I'm just gonna do what I gotta do to make my money. I still think there was a little bit of him trying to like rationalize it, and I think that's part of why he went to Howard mm-hmm. and tried to present it in that way. And I'm really glad that Howard came at him the way that he did, because I think then afterwards, I mean, obviously he still went through with it, but I think he was honest with himself at that point of like, I am, you know, he didn't steal from them, but he definitely manipulated
yeah.
the situation.
And like, he's, Jimmy McGill is still not comfortable with what, with that orchestration of like, that was just pretty masterful though.
It was very clever. I was wondering who was going with the shoes.
He had to have returned all the other shoes, right? There's no way he bought that many shoes.
I thought he was going to be... At first, I thought he was just going to scam her and, like, sell her the shoes and tell her they're, like, super expensive and sell a bunch of shoes. But then, with just the one pair, like, did he really need to buy that many sizes?
He didn't know her size.
I mean, but how many different sizes could her foot be?
A lot, probably.
I'm not a women's shoe expert.
I'm not either.
He had a lot of shoes in there.
I'm not either, and I would probably buy 12 sizes just to be absolutely sure.
I was also a little upset with him with the bingo thing of just calling the numbers like straight in a row. I felt like I would expect him to have a little more subtlety to it and try to like put one or two other numbers kind of in between there to like space it out.
There's no other way to run that scam.
Yeah, I guess, because somebody else could win accidentally.
If you put magnetic stuff in,
they're
the
always
balls,
gonna come up next.
It's gonna be only the magnetic. All the magnetic balls are gonna fight with each other to go to the
match. Right. Yeah.
That scam only works one way.
Yeah.
It's
just a little too easy.
Well, yeah, super lo-fi. Also, yeah. that entire bingo game up until that point didn't have those four numbers, so he could just do one quick dump, which I just found that really funny too. Rigging bingo, guys. Speaking of bingo, our viewer, his name is Zach Wilson. He told us about a thing on the AMC website called Better Call Saul Bingo, which if you answer enough trivia questions, it gives you exclusive content. This week's exclusive content was a 3-minute short film we watched about half of, which is the family from season one that was out camping minus the father, having a picnic on the side of a highway. I didn't see the end. I'm sure it's like I will, but that's quick shout out to Zach Wilson. I think I'm saying that right, for letting us know.
That's
and
right.
Also play the Better Call Saul Bingo.
That's right.
Exclusive content.
Practice your trivia.
That trivia is kind of hot. Like it's Better Call Saul / Breaking Bad trivia.
Mostly Breaking Bad trivia.
No, it's like half and half, but it's a lot of stuff. I'm trying to think. They never said how much the settlement was. They just said that Saul gets about 1.1.
Yeah.
Which would be about, like, well, no, he'd run it through the business. He'd probably collect most of it. Like, he would run it through that. Or, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it'd definitely be enough to get them through.
Oh, yeah, I'm just thinking, like, after taxes. I'm silly.
Yeah.
I always think the take-home pay.
Yeah, I mean... Yeah, it was just rough seeing him, because so many times we've seen him like do things like this, but because of the motivation and stuff, it's like, all right, we're rooting for you. Like, this is what you got to do. But this one, like, I know he needs money, but man, like, she's a nice old lady, not even like a mean old lady.
I mean, his rationalization is that once she settles, everybody's nice.
Yeah,
to
everybody's
her again.
Happy. Yeah, and they'll be friends again, and she's getting paid, they're getting paid, and like, otherwise, you know, they drag it out a few years or whatever, and everybody gets a couple $100 more, so mm-hmm. they're not really losing much. I get the logic, but I think that's a lot of self-rationalization.
It's a lot of self-rationalization to do a bad thing.
But then also too, we see just in how self-absorbed Jimmy is being about the whole thing and like pushing this forward just so he can get the money, because really it is about him, even though he's trying to make it seem like it's not. You see it so much when he comes in and, you know, goes to talk to Kim, and he's not even, like, if he stopped for one second and looked at his surroundings and paid attention, he would see that she is busy. She's panicking. She's running late. She's got all these things.
There's a certain self-centeredness
to him in
that moment.
And he is just completely oblivious. And she's even trying to tell him. And he's like, no, I don't care. Listen, stop what you're doing. We're doing what I'm doing now. Which is like such a self-centered thing to do, which you don't want to do in a relationship, for sure.
I don't know what you're talking about.
But, yeah, it's just... I don't know. It's definitely, I would say fall is a good word for it. I think we're definitely seeing a descent of him going into the darkness.
Well,
I think this
just,
is a step for sure.
This is definitely a huge step where it's just, I did that. Yeah, it's kind of rough. We're down to the Kim of it all. Kim takes a case with Gatwood Oil, as we saw last week. The case seems pretty open and shut. For, well, not against a judge, but if you got all the landowners together, that essentially it's on the border
of
Texas.
Seems like a big if, though, because anytime you got a large, you have a group of people trying to get them to agree on something, you're just asking for trouble.
Sorry, I just opened up the chat and I'm like, oh, I've been neglecting the chat this whole time.
It looks like a good, definitely could be a good deal for her, but it also looks like it's just, it still looks like it's a lot of work, especially for one person. And, you know, she's got to prepare one of those presentations for each person that they're, you know, got to convince.
And it's just her and Francesca. Like, so what do we think Kim's motivations were? Was she trying to keep up with Jimmy?
Yeah, I think she's trying to just make sure that there's, you know, that there's money in the bank and that they're comfortable and they can pay their bills and stuff. And I think she's trying to take care of her, but also Jimmy. That's why I think she felt the need to take on more responsibility than maybe she really should. Because she needs to step up because Jimmy's, you know, struggling. I think that's why.
Mm.
And obviously, as we see, it comes at a cost. Her not getting enough sleep, and she is on her way to the Gatwood meeting running late. Gets in an accident.
As someone who's fallen asleep behind the wheel and gotten in an accident, that's exactly what it's like.
Yeah, I mean, I can't... I haven't had that, but I have... I mean, I haven't gotten to a car accident falling asleep,
but you have fallen asleep.
I've dozed off in
those
scenarios, where you're so tired and you close your eyes for a second and you open your eyes and like time has passed and you don't even like realize. And just the way that they edited that was just I've never seen that done that way. Like, it just translated that feeling so well visually. Like, you just the way they cut that, you see her, she just closes her eyes for just a second, and I have to watch it again, how they smash cut it together, but just boom.
I meant to go through it, but I wanted to watch that short, but I'm sure you can find the...
Yeah, I'm definitely going to watch it again.
I'm sure you can find the cut if you really look for it.
It just was like... It took me a while to even realize what was going on. At first, I thought it was just a dream, like what happened, but just man, the way they did it.
Oh, no, as someone who's...
And it's just terrifying,
someone who's woken up on a steering wheel, I know exactly what... Yeah. I knew exactly what happened. That her Pontiac Eclipse that I thought was a Grand Am this whole time... slammed into a rock. The rock looked like it saved her life.
Yeah, it looked like it could have got... She could have gone down a big hill.
Because it looked like there was a giant
ravine.
Like, there was a giant
ravine.
Yeah, it
looked like she turned left off the road and just, like,
but then it was... Well, she...
Rocks.
It looks like she kept going... She fell asleep and kept going straight or veered a little to the left as the road turned right.
Mm-hmm. So she just went right off.
She's hit a rock, and I love that for the... Just that extra... Like, that extra ump, the trunk opens, and then
all the papers
just fly everywhere.
Yeah, it just adds to, like... It's, like, the worst case scenario, like, everything else that she's been doing, and now this. Like, obviously, she's not going to make the meeting. I'm glad she's not dead. But, I don't know. I'm nervous to see what's going to happen next week, too, because, you know, I cannot imagine her being really happy with Jimmy... already after their last interaction, and with her feeling like she needs to take the responsibility to do all this stuff too, I think she's going to put some of this on him, and I think rightfully so she'll be stressed because she's going to be like injured.
Are you saying that she's going to blame Jimmy for this or feel
I don't know if she's going to directly blame him, but I think somewhere along the lines, it's like, if you weren't a fuck up, if I didn't have to pick up slack for you, somewhere in those ways, it's like, I wouldn't have taken this extra job, I wouldn't have pushed myself so far and not slept, I wouldn't, it's like, none of this would have happened.
That's not directly his fault, though.
No, I agree, but I can...
And in typical MacGuffin fashion, before she got into the car... He showed up with a solution to that entire problem.
Yeah.
She was too busy but dealing with a client and doing her
job.
Is
it a solution? Like, yeah, they get a payday, and that still may not happen immediately, even if she does accept the settle offer. And, I mean, for all we know, it may not still happen, too, with this show. You know, she could go in and go, oh, I'm ready to accept, and Howard can end up talking her out of it or something, where Jimmy's already, like, celebrated.
But it's still relatively...
Yeah,
it's enough money that it would never be a problem again. Shout out to Raphael in the chat again. It was $17.4 million. So Jimmy would get... About one, he said 1.1, but I think he has 20% of that pot. I think he has 20% of what the lawyers will make. The math, 1.1 million.
I took algebra four times, so I'm not gonna touch that.
I would not blame you.
It's money. It's big money.
In amount,
large.
That's
numbers.
How much I have.
Many commas.
But I hope we don't get Kim lashing out against Jimmy. If anything, I feel like we should get Kim being apologetic to Jimmy in that moment.
I don't think that's going to happen. Especially not after their last interaction. Like, I get...
But then it...
Like, yes, I get that he
doesn't
was...
make her look... Like, that interaction makes neither of them look great, but it makes her look a little worse that he's...
No, she's being an asshole.
Really?
Yes. Yes, he's there with some money, and it's great, but, like, it's also...
I mean, you also have to look at, you need to stop,
but you
whereas
also,
she literally... But she
you have to look
she
at,
should have pressed
you
it.
Have to look at the bigger picture too, in terms of like, what are they doing, right? Kim is working her ass off, not sleeping, you know, working real legitimate work, whereas Jimmy is just eking by, looking for a crack to take advantage of someone. He didn't do any work now to get this money, other than, you know, ruining this lady's relationship,
I mean,
with her home.
By a Saul Goodman standard, he did a lot of work. He didn't do any lawyer work.
The level of work here is not the same, right? So, yes, he's coming in with a bunch of money, but you have to think about how invested Kim is in this, okay? It's just so selfish of him, the way that he acted, and to even, like, to just not be to be oblivious to how hard she's working and how tired she is and how, like, disheveled she is, like... There's no way that she apologizes to him.
We'll agree to disagree.
I mean, we'll see.
I think they both handled each other poorly in that scene.
Yeah,
but
I agree.
I think they both share equal burden of guilt.
I'm on team Kim.
Jack Turner in the chat. She is not picking up any slack on Jimmy's behalf. If anyone would be indirectly blamed, it should be Kim's client, who put more on her plate than she needed. I mean, she took the client.
Yeah, the client doesn't.
She took the client, but I do see the argument, the client giving her a 2 week, the client waiting to see her in person to give her a 2 week timeline seems a little rough.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. I think that they mentioned her because she pulled off that, you know, pseudo miracle for her other client. So I think that's why they were like, oh, we need a miracle. And they're like, oh, I know just the guy or gal.
Yeah.
And, you know, they kind of recommended her name. Yeah, I mean, I don't think any of it's Jimmy's fault. When I say this,
yeah,
I'm
yeah.
speaking from Kim's perspective. I don't think that it's on Kim to take care of, to pick up any of Jimmy's slack. I think that Jimmy is going to figure out a way one way or another. But... I think from what I have seen of Kim, I think the way she views it is that she's doing it because she has to pick up slack. Otherwise, I don't know why she's doing it. Because she's making a good... For herself, she's making money off Mesa Verde. She's already worked a lot. You know, she's working very hard. She's keeping busy. She's doing, you know, more or less what she wants to do as her own practice. I don't see another reason why she takes on this extra client outside of trying to pick up some slack to cover for Jimmy.
Jack Turner in the chat, Jimmy is keeping up his end of the bargain. Kim knows Jimmy and doesn't truly want to know where the rent money's coming from. Super Curio in the chat, I don't feel bad for the old lady because she's entitled to thousands of dollars when she'd get nothing if it weren't for Jimmy discovering Sandpiper's overcharging.
That's true, too.
That it's,
but is it still his place to manipulate people like that? I don't know. I mean, I definitely get that. He
I think this is still,
I mean,
a
he's
going to
get the money either way.
I think in this show, in this after show, we're going to start saying a Jimmy move or a Saul move. I think Sandpiper is still very much a Jimmy move. Everything Sandpiper is still very much a Jimmy move. He had an element of Saul with the...
I don't know, man. It's hard to say because even from the beginning, like, yes, he's helping the old people that are being taken advantage of, but it's also a paycheck for him, too. Mm. Like, he knows he's going to be getting paid. He knows he's going to be making a large sum of money, especially when they make it the large class action suit that they do. So I don't know about that.
Yeah, I think it's weird. I'm on team Kim. I'm on team Kim for the whole crash, the scene right before the crash scene. And I'm on Team Jimmy for the Sandpiper Crossing agreement, and then you're the inverse.
I don't know. I'm on, yes.
You're on Team.
I'm on team. I'm on Team Conflicted.
Team Conflicted.
There's lots of feelings.
But judging from the chat, and I'm sure judging from the boards we'll read all week, I feel that's the point.
Yeah, I like
that. Everyone's gonna land on.
I think we've gotten a good perspective of everyone's kind of. Motivations and why they're doing what they're doing, and you know, to bring it back to what we were talking about earlier, an episode like this makes the episodes before it that felt kind of meh much more rewarding.
Yes.
Where, like, now if I were to go back, I think I would get more value out of those because of seeing where they go, and seeing it now, it's like, okay, now I understand why we had to see this, why we saw this, and what it means, and yada. And when you get here, you're able to formulate that opinion because you have some type of, like, a background perspective.
So, we've been talking about the past. It's predictions time. We're about to get into the future.
That was so smooth.
Wasn't it, though?
And now,
all right, before we get into predictions at large, Hector Salamanca, this time next week, in a wheelchair or not in a wheelchair, or headed towards a wheelchair or not in a wheelchair? Or, like, in a hospital bed, like...
I have no idea, man. I think something could happen. I think part of me thinks that something's going to happen to him, but it's going to be separate from whatever puts him in a wheelchair later.
Mm.
And part of me thinks that it's not, and that we're just going to see him in, you know, with the bell and stuff by the end of the episode or something. So I don't know.
I would not be shocked if we get a double red herring.
I'm hoping that we get a
double red herring this season, that the ibuprofen pills were a red herring, and then he gets into a fight with the dad at the upholstery shop, and that's where we end it.
Or he doesn't get
like
in a fight.
And it's a second red herring.
He walks out of the shop and just gets hit by a bus. Just a completely random bus. And the film students from the college get out. And they're shooting a commercial for Nacho's dad's place. That's my prediction.
I feel like all of that will happen.
If that did happen, I would have a heart attack. I'd go full Hector.
This video would go huge.
It would be very viral.
We would be tweeting.
That's right.
But, like, guy at AfterBuzz TV called it by the page.
That's yeah, I don't know, man. I want to make predictions, but I just feel like it's so.
Yeah,
like they know where they're going, and I'm just, like, along for the ride. I'm excited to see Mike, though. I'm very confident we're going to get some action, some good.
We're definitely going to get some explosions,
some Mike,
some action,
badassness.
Mazi Ivor 1 in the chat. I think Nacho's dad is going to go to the cops, then get shot for it. I think Hector will be in a wheelchair, making everything Nacho did for nothing. We still don't know.
I could see that happening too.
We still don't know if Nacho's plan will lead to a heart attack, which will then lead to a paralysis that leads Hector to a wheelchair. Like that path is still there. We just don't know.
Yeah, I don't know if it'll be for nothing. I definitely think something will happen, but I could definitely see Nacho's dad dying either way, especially with his response to Nacho. It doesn't seem like he's gonna, like, just suck it up and go along with it.
Gatlin Oil, do they drop Kim? Because he needs another lawyer to do that same plan.
I'm curious to see what happens. I mean, it's not like she was just so late that, like, she missed the meeting. Like, she got into a car accident, so...
But we can see from the preview she's going to be in the hospital. Like, she might not be able to handle Mesa Verde now. So that might be a huge... Mesa Verde might have to drop her. Because the only other person in the building... The only people in the building are Francesca and Jimmy, neither of whom are lawyers.
She may have to refer them to somebody else or something yet to cover. That's a good point.
And then one last question before predictions at large.
I mean, at least they have the money, though. They have, well, theoretically, whenever that
they
comes in.
They have theoretical money.
So
that, they have theoretical money that could float them if both Mesa Verde and Gatlin Oil drop them.
Mm-hmm.
Chuck and Howard, we see a preview where they're about to shake hands and make an agreement. Where do we see this agreement with them and HHM?
I don't know if that's going to happen. I think that might be a red herring, especially since we saw it in the preview. But it seems, what I got from that is it looks like they had a meeting already, and that was like the end of the meeting. I think maybe Howard, again, throws some weight around or a threat or something. That's like, look, well, we can do all this, whatever. Or, you know, you can just shake my hand. We can, you know, let bygones be bygones and be normal. So, I don't know. I'm definitely excited, though. I'm really, really enjoying the Howard Chuck clash, because it feels like it's been a long time coming. It's been building. We've seen Howard like stay quiet and stay by the side for a long time. So I'm really looking forward to more of that for sure.
Do you have any predictions at large?
No, I mean, I definitely think something's going to happen with Kim and Jimmy's relationship by the end of the season. And I'm curious if we're going to get, I want to know more about Mike and his daughter, if any of that comes into it, and the stuff with Anita, we still don't really know. Like, what does that mean?
There was some talk of that in the chat, that the timeline seems fishy, that body last week was Anita's husband. That it's,
yeah, because
the
it,
timeline is yeah. pretty clear that it's the guys from the truck, and then he found the body and then he got them in trouble. Maybe that's what he did for Gus, or part of what he did for Gus. I'll just go out on a limb, and I think Mike somehow puts Hector in the wheelchair, but in a way where it's not in front of anybody else. Where that Nacho can still think that it was the pills. Like,
I think there's going to be some type of scenario where it benefits Gus to have Hector alive.
Yes.
But to not have him be able to be a force of opposition. Mm-hmm. So that's what scenario that ends him up in the... win the wheelchair. What that is, I have no idea.
I also agree.
I could see Gus being that way of like, well, I'm not going to kill you because I still kind of need you, but I need you to stop being a thorn in my side. Mm. So,
I also see the strain of this week particularly breaking up Kim and Jimmy, but I also see Kim not being in the office that much, so Jimmy taking over the office with Francesca. But he's not a lawyer yet.
Yeah, what's he going to do in the office?
I don't know. I have not figured that part out, but I think there's something there that Jimmy's going to kind of take over that office, and that's going to be extra strain that's going to lead to Kim wanting to break it off with him, both professionally and personally. Do we have anything else? I think we're good.
No.
We talked about all the things.
We did.
If people wanted to continue to talk to you about all the things, where can they find you on Twitter?
They could find me on Twitter at DogLikeNate. That's with 2 G's. I am on all social media like that. And also, next week I'll be hosting the season finale as well as this show.
Yes.
But also Silicon Valley.
You're double-heading next week.
That's right. Double finales.
It'll
be a finale fiesta.
And I've been your host, Steve Kaufman. You can find me on Twitter at Steve Kaufman. That is KAUFMANN. And that's where you're going to have to follow me, because this week I'm starting a vlog. I turned 31 on June of this month, June 1st of this month. Thank you so much for that.
You're welcome.
And I've decided that from June 1st to June 1st, I will not have a drop of liquor. And I'm doing 52 vlogs where I talk about it. I shot the first one. I'm going to edit it tonight. I'm going to tweet about it. I'm going to tweet the link when I have it. It's going to be a channel. I'm going to base a channel where I just kind of talk in front of a white screen in my bedroom. Just because I talk all the time anyway. But
might as well.
It'll be my journey if you are at all interested in seeing... This week's not that bad, but I feel like week 5 I'm going to struggle. I feel people might enjoy that,
struggle too. Is probably very entertaining.
It probably will be, but that's where you guys can find it. Thank you, guys, and good night.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.